This is Jerry Ayers with Supernatural Investigators of Minnesota, and you're listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
Hello and welcome to Ghosts in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today, September 1st, 2024, marks the 55th anniversary of the episode on Unsolved Mysteries that was released on Netflix in 2020, was the most downloaded, watched episode that year. And since the episode came out, I had to have these people on my podcast. I was new at the time, probably over a year into podcasting, so I wasn't really well known, just a little guy out there. And I reached out to Tom Warner, Tom Reed, Melanie Kirchdorfer, the director of photography, Justin Janowitz, the art director, Doug Sackman. I even reached out to the director, Marcus Clark, and to my surprise, not one, but everybody reached out to. They got back to me. I was just so thrilled that they came on my show. So in 2020, I did a 8-part series. I had all these people on my show. Then I reached out to my podcast friends and people that I knew that watched the show. I called it the round table. That was so much fun to do, but so much work. So this year, I'm doing something different. I'm going to mark the 55th anniversary by having only Tom Warner on. So we're going to talk about what he's been up to, a little bit about his abduction, his book, his movie he's making. So we got a lot to get into. So right after these brief messages, I'll be back with my conversation with Tom Warner, Unsolved Mysteries, Berkshire's UFO episode.
Hey everyone, Eric here. I am the host of the Unseen Paranormal Podcast. Join me for a new episode every Wednesday as I delve into the unseen world with historians, authors, researchers, and investigators as we try to understand and make sense of the paranormal. You can listen to past and future episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or at unseenparanormalpodcast.com. Please like the show on Facebook and share with your friends. And remember, some of the scariest things are unseen.
I want to welcome back to the show Tom Warner from the Unsolved Mysteries, the Berkshire's UFO episode that premiered on Netflix on July 1st, 2020. It was the most watched TV show for the entire summer of that year. So 4 years later, Tom Warner is going to help celebrate the 55th anniversary of that unbelievable night. We have a lot to talk about, Tom, so let's get into it and welcome back to the show.
Al, thanks a lot for having me back. Time flies, as they say, you know?
Yeah,
no pun there, Al.
Can you imagine it was like 55 years ago? I mean...
Well, I can't.
Without giving your age, you know.
No. It's not enough brain bleach, really. It's something I'll never forget, really.
You know, because it was a different time back then. I mean, in 1960s. I mean, really, when something like this happens, I mean, who do you go to? I mean, who do you share it with? I mean, who do you tell? Because there was no Google or YouTube or Facebook. There was none of that.
Well, the first thing you do is, you know, the at 10 years old, your immediate people that are around you, like my neighbors, Graham and Debbie, who I colored with back then, and her sister, a little, was there, and my brothers. But when my mother said, "We're not going to talk about it," it was like, oh, shutting it down.
Right. I mean, so, you know, before we get into your book and your movie and your paintings and, you know, take us back to that night 55 years ago to some of the people out there that maybe haven't seen it yet.
Well, you know, it's unbelievable. It's like, it was just like yesterday. And I think about I think about this all the time once it hits Labor Day. Labor Day has always been, you know, very meaningful for me, you know. So, well, it was 1969, for those who don't know the story. And it was an unusually hot Labor Day. I would say up in around 90 degrees. And the day started out, we went swimming, my family. We had a small creek down on our property, and we used to dam it up and go swimming in the summer. So this was the end of the summer, you know, Labor Day was like, after that, you're going back to school, forget it, summer was over, you know. And so we had a nice long day swimming and everything, and as the day progressed, we had a cookout outside, which was usually, our cookouts usually were either hamburgers or hot dogs or something like that, but this was hot dogs and sodas and everything. It was just a normal Labor Day. And then it was getting towards evening, and I said to my mother, can I go next door and go over and see Debbie and call her? And she goes, just don't come home too late, you know? It was a different world back then. You know, mm-hmm. Today you don't say, okay, to your 10-year-old, come back, you know, just don't come home too late at 10 years old.
Right.
You know? But they were like, they were the next door neighbors, and they had the grandmother. And so my mother always knew I was in good hands, so it wasn't a real big deal. So I went over and got there, and, you know, Grandma always said cookies, which I always liked. I swear that woman baked all the time. Between Grandma and my mother, we were never in a short supply for cookies, and had cookies, milk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the TV room, and I said, you want to go color? And we did. Another room off their TV room. And then after a while, we had records on. I remember some of it was the Beatles, you know, the 45s. Remember the old 45s? Oh, yeah, yeah.
I still got a Rockola 1955 jukebox I used. So.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Uh-huh. And those little clips that went in the 45, and you'd stack them up and everything. Mm-hmm. And so we had stacked up some there. And then it came down, it was the Safaris Wipeout.
Oh, yeah.
And I got up and I started dancing, you know, because I was, you know, I was just kind of fooling around and everything. And all of a sudden, I just sensed something. I didn't know quite what it was, and I kind of zhoop the arm off it and across. I probably scratched her record, and she goes, "What are you doing?" And I went to the window, and I heard this telepathic voice telling me, "You have to go home." And I'm like, "I have to go home?" And the voice repeated again, "You have to go home now." And I looked at Debbie, and I said, "I have to go home." And Debbie says, "Why? Is your mother calling you or what?" You know, being funny, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's God calling me from those clouds up there. I don't know." I said, "But I got to go home," I said. And I just felt an absolute panic at that point. And I started yelling, "I have to go home. I have to go home." And I ran out of that room. And from that big room, which was attached to the kitchen, so you had to open a door and you went into their kitchen, and Grandma was there, and Grandma was by the window, her sister Jane was on the phone, and I kept saying, I have to go home, and Jane's like, "Tommy, what's wrong I said, "I don't know, I gotta go home." You know. And I'm like full bolts, you know, and I was a fast kid, you know. If there's one thing I could do at 10 years old is I could run like a deer. And I ran out of the house. And to run out of the house, you had to go through this one room, which was like where they kept the freezer and stuff like that for the house, you know. And then you exited that, and there was a hallway out to go out, which was off a coal room. And I bolted out of that door like a rocket. And I ran across the driveway heading for my house. And in an instant, all the sounds disappeared, like the katydids and the crickets, which this time of year can be very loud.
Mm-hmm.
And I started running, and all of a sudden, from my perspective, I thought I was very calm. Very, very calm. But I sensed something off to my left. I didn't know what it was, but I just had a feeling something was off to my left. Now, from their perspective, a beam came on me, and I was running, but I wasn't moving. And my perspective, I'm in a beam, and I look up, and I see a UFO. And my hands jerked back, and instant, I was gone. I witnessed gone in the beam, UFO beam,
mm-hmm.
which was eyewitnessed by Graham and Jane. And Jane was on Unsolved Mysteries, and she testified to that, both on the show and in her writing in the Berkshire UFO case, which is in the Historical Society in Great Barrington, which includes all the records of myself, Jane Shaw, Jane Green. Let's see who else. Of course, Tom Reed had his in there too.
I had it down here, written down here somewhere, all these people that was
in there. Everybody that was involved in the show, their documents went in as the case. The
Melanie Kirchdorfer and...
Melanie, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Melanie Kirchdorfer. She was a Bowman at that point, but Melanie Kirchdorfer, who was on the show, I thought everybody did a nice job. The show itself was told to show how a UFO incident affected a community. It never was saying that this was the only place that this took place. It was never saying it was the Sheffield incident or the Great Barrington incident. It was showing how this affected a small community.
Yeah, and before you go further, that's what I was going to mention. You know, many times on the show, I've always said it wasn't just a Great Barrington, Sheffield, Berkshires. It was a multi-state area because, from my responses I got back, it was overwhelming. I mean, to this day, I have over 200 responses from... the 8-part series I ran back 4 years ago.
Right.
And to my surprise, I mean, I had responses from New York, New Jersey, Delaware, Maine, even my state of Ohio. I mean, I know I missed a few here, but it was overwhelming. It just, the show was overwhelming. The responses were overwhelming. And I was just a little guy back then, new to podcasting,
New to podcasting.
Well, yeah, I was, because I reached out to all you guys, everybody you mentioned. Plus the director and the director of photography. And I mean, I was so honored and blessed that yet everybody responded back to me. And I'm thinking, wow, and I was getting emails from other podcasters who've been in the business a lot longer than me. Mm-hmm. How did you get a hold of these people? We've been trying, we can't get, I just straight out and asked them, you want to be on my show?
You called and you said, would you be on my show?
Yeah.
Al's a nice guy there. Sure, Al, no problem.
Once you got on the craft, did you recognize anybody?
I didn't know anybody at that time. You got to remember, these are all strangers to me that I saw. There was like this wall, a curved wall. And the first two were girls. The two girls, one was taller, one's a little shorter. And they were like really hysterical, especially the second one. And I just kept looking down. I was like afraid to look at anyone, And the third girl, she's like looking right at me. And I just sort of looked down, but I put my hand out and she put her hand out from behind whatever material was there. And I said, you'll be okay. And whether it was telepathy we were hearing or she was actually hearing, but then she screamed, and I turned, looked back to my left. That's when I saw Melanie, who I later learned it was Melanie. And her just had a horrific fright on her face, which scared the daylights out of me. Now I'm like, oh my God. And then third girl on the wall screamed a second time, and an alien put his hand on my shoulder.
Did she even see like any type of features or?
Well, I.
Or can you know, remember, can you remember that?
Oh yeah, I did, because I actually did drawings of it. The next week, I did drawings of it, and I would say kind of Yoda-like, but a little, just like a little, you know, a little bit rounder head, but bigger up, these bigger eyes. That's one of the things I remember, is the bigger eyes and a smaller mouth. Mm-hmm. That's what I drew. And then the next thing I saw was, and this, whatever it was, had telepathy and was telling me to walk this way, which I naturally, of course, I did. And I'm just looking down because I just kept seeing kids. And I didn't want to look. I really didn't want to look. And then I saw another female alien, had long scraggly hair, and that's how I drew the female alien. And then I was like shown around a little bit, and I remember, you know, because it was like I'm seeing a lot of lights, you know. Where those lights were coming from, I don't know. Because it was so surreal, you know, that all of a sudden you're on the ground, now you're not. And the next thing I know, I'm in a room. It looked like a control room of something, you know. And then I'm looking at it's a human, but obviously not from here. And he said, "We'll be back." And that was the telepathic voice I was hearing, the guy's voice. And we'll be back. And there was a little girl with him, and she gave me a little wave. And as she waved, boop, now I'm floating 6 inches off the ground in my yard. And then I was put down, only the beam's still on me. And my brother's screaming for me to run. And I can't. It's holding me down. I know my brother's in back of me. I couldn't see him, but I knew he was near our garage, which I was close to that. I remember one podcast, they said, "Oh, you said your brother was right in back of you." Well, 25 feet is pretty close to right in back of me. And, you know, there's so many times people try to pick apart a story to, you know, they have nothing better.
They're looking, right, they're looking for holes, and they want to. Right. Discredit, you know, whatever you're saying. You
I
know.
Mean, and I said, look, my library room here is 20 feet. I really consider 20 feet pretty close, you know, or 30 feet. That's close. Mm-hmm. You know. So anyway, I had telepathy again, and it said, "We'll be done in a minute." And at that time, I had a humorous thought, because we used to always play flashlight tag.
You mm-hmm. know? You're right.
Because we played till like 10 o'clock at night.
Right.
We'd play hide and seek. I mean, we played games when we were kids.
Right, like, you know? Like our parents always said, you know, just be home before the streetlights come on, you know.
Right. And we're out in the country, there's no streetlights.
You're not streetlights, just so you got to look at the...
you know, when finally...
You can't see a last tree in the tree
right.
line.
I think eventually my parents probably, you know, they probably say, "Okay, should we let them in now?" Yeah, okay, come on in, kids, you know, one of those, you know. But, I mean, we really played late, you know. And especially because, you know, if in the summer, my goodness, we stayed out late. And... So anyway, I'm thinking flashlight tag, because you'd have a flashlight and you'd look for somebody and you go, "I see you, tag, you're it," you know, or whatever. And I'm thinking, if I ever had a light like this that's holding me on the ground, I would love to have one of these, I thought to myself. And I don't, that was my thought.
Uh-huh.
And then I had telepathy again, and this voice said, "We'll be done in a minute." And about a minute goes by. And the voice said again, "We're done." And I rolled, and as soon as they said, "We're done," the beam goes off. Now I'm thinking at this very moment, what were they doing?
Right. What am I thinking is, how long was that whole time period, would you say, lasted?
Well, from the
you're,
time...
You're saying it wasn't that well, long
well,
in your head.
Well, first the whole thing was probably about 10 minutes. The whole thing was probably about 10 minutes. From the time I was beamed up to the time I was put back down and let go, it was probably about 10 minutes.
And Melanie was saying on the show that she was up. She's lost time for almost the whole night.
Yeah, I mean.
So I'm just curious, you know, because
that's true. You know, time. It's so interesting about Al about time. Okay, we'll get into that. So the first time, that was September 1st, 1969, which is probably one of the top 10 UFO cases in the world. I've been told that by BBC4, many people. And what Unsolved didn't do, which they had planned on doing, they were thinking about putting it in, was that the UFO did come back 2 weeks later. And
I heard that. I heard that from the people, people I talked to from Netflix and the Unsolved Mysteries. That's exactly what they said. Yeah.
Yeah. Two weeks later. Only the second time I lost like 45 minutes of time. And I only remember that there were kids on that UFO, and that was it. And it was like I threw the baseball to my brother. He threw it back. I threw it to him. He threw it back. I threw it to him. The ball went about 20, 25 feet. The ball stopped right in midair. I'm staring at the ball stop. And then it comes right back at me, flying really fast. And I got my glove up and it tipped it and it went past me. And I ran after the ball. And as I did, my other brothers and another neighbor were yelling, "Did you see the UFO? Did you see the UFO?" It was right over Tommy. And the only thing I could think of, Al, was, "Oh no, not again."
Right.
I'm like, what the? And then it occurred to me when I threw the ball, the sun was just going down. You know when the sun goes down, but it's still a little light out. You know, as kids, we squeezed out every ounce of daylight that there was. Now I look up and the stars are out. That's over four. I've timed it so many times, Al. That's like over 45 minutes. From the time it's dusk to the stars out is about 45 minutes. And I'm like, now I had questions and questions and questions. I was just blown away at that moment.
There's so many of my guests that's on the show that has that have either been abducted or had telepathy. That's right. What I meant to say. Yeah, mental telepathy. You know, and it was like the time you mentioned. That time. That's a funny thing. You know how?
Well, it is a funny
you
thing.
You really
okay,
can't
so,
pinpoint.
Okay, so Al, here's one for you. So when I'm 17 and I was in a car accident, I was going 100 miles an hour. And my life flashed before me. And everything was broken down. And I'm seeing my whole life flash before me. Which, by the way, it's a bad sign when you're seeing your whole life flash before you.
I've had it done, you
know?
Right.
You're right. You know, you're like, uh-oh, you know. But at a wicked speed, 100 miles an hour, you know, you're taking up real estate real fast, you know. And yet, I've gone for 45 minutes and it's a second. And I'm nothing. Nothing there. You know? So the human brain's incredible when it deals with time. It really is. Mm-hmm. And it's a very complex subject. So often I think, you know, we don't understand time. We understand our time. You know, and I've said this before, you know, there's 60 seconds in a minute or 60 minutes in an hour, 24 hours. And then there's, you know, that's a day. 7 days, there's a week, 52 in a year, and all of a sudden, happy birthday, right?
Right.
Right? And we are so locked into this time structure we know as humans. But we don't know as how other beings come here from so far away that we can't comprehend how they even get here.
Right.
It's more questions than answers. I mean, I'm not going to say that I know how that UFO ship flew. I just know that after it left here in the Berkshires, it was seen where I was 2 weeks prior up on Lake Champlain. And that was, they watched it go across Lake Champlain in a split second, and it was on the other shore in a split second. So that's, doing the mathematical formula, Al, that's 23,000 miles slow cruising speed.
Yeah, I had a person on my show from the Pentagon telling me, you know, about the Tic Tac video, you know, that went from 20,000 feet to the ocean in right. less than, what was it, 2 seconds or something like that, three right. seconds. If you take a cliff diver, dives these 100 feet dives, you know, it right. takes them almost approximately that amount of time to go that distance to hit the water.
Sure. Right.
This thing's going 20,000 feet. So they're estimating that the craft's going, you know, over, you know, 20,000 miles an hour.
Exactly. Just what we said.
And from all these states, like I said before, that contact me, all these people and their experiences, you know, so it's possible it was there and there and there and there in a short amount of time, you
of
know,
course.
And what they experienced.
How do we know that, I mean, there were so many that night reports, this thing, you know, the first people I found after Unsolved, I'll put it this way, Al, after Unsolved Mysteries aired, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I got, my phone blew up.
You know? I'd imagine.
I imagine. And it's been bizarre. I'll tell you in a minute about that. So the first person that contacted me, she wanted to talk to me, and I did. And her and her friend were from out west, California, and they were described everything that happened to me, the same thing. And then I asked for a description, and I saw a picture, and I said, "You were on that UFO. I remember you, both of you."
Uh-huh.
They were the first two in the wall. And then it wasn't too long after that, I got an email, a friend request on Facebook, and I accepted it, and then asked, would I call? And that was from a woman named Mario Smiley, who's in Connecticut. And she was really upset. And she goes, you're the boy in the UFO. And I said, yes, I know. I was on Unsolved Mysteries. She goes, I know. I watched it. She goes, I broke down and started crying. I said, oh, I'm sorry. And she goes, no, you don't understand. I was on that UFO. And I said, I recognize you from your photo. The one that photo that's was on New York Times, San Francisco Chronicle, LA Times, UK Sun, everything, right? And I said, well, send me a picture. And when she did, I said, you're the third girl on the wall. She goes, yes, I was. But she told me things that I hadn't made public.
And that probably blew your mind more than even just being on the show, you know, that you're contacted with people that you're contacted by people that you've seen on the craft, you know.
Right.
Or they've seen you.
But it wasn't the first time that I was told that someone had seen me on the craft. The second craft, someone had said that they had saw me on the craft.
Uh-huh.
On that, the second craft.
Right.
And it was a complete stranger, you know, and he told me things. I'm like, oh, my God. And the first thing I did, I got home. I said to my brothers, did you guys talk about this to anybody? No, Tommy. Why? I'm like, because this guy says he remembers me on the UFO.
So how did the Unsolved Mysteries contact you?
Well, that was interesting, you know. So Unsolved Mysteries was talking about doing a reboot. And I, from the story that I understood, Tom Reed wanted to be in the reboot about the Reed UFO incident, which was the whatever you want to call it, you know?
Mm.
And so they were checking around, and they said that every time they checked around, the name Tom Warner came up. And I said, okay, I'll take... I'll So they eventually they called the program segment producer called me, left a message, and I called back. I wasn't keen on doing it. I really wasn't. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to do it because to that point, there was so much emphasis on Sheffield and the Reed story that they had that I didn't have anything to do with that. I mean, that was down in Sheffield. Did it come up? Yeah, I backed Tom Reed because he told me about his story. Actually, the first time that story came up, it was a friend of his, and the gal said to me, "My friend's Tom Reed." And she goes, "Do you remember going to school with him?" I said, "I knew who he was, but wasn't close friends or anything." And she says, "He knows all about your case." And I'm like, "Who the heck did this guy talk to that he knows what happened to me?" But anyway, we made contact, and I actually ended up doing a picture for the Roswell UFO Museum, which I used his experience and my experience and combined them. But even at that point, I drew the boy. I put him in the UFO picture because I didn't want to be known about it. I just wasn't interested in coming forward because it's such a complicated story, and I didn't want to tell it unless I could tell the entire story eventually.
Yeah, that's why that's exactly. Yeah, it does because after talking to Marcus Clark, the director, right. He really opened my eyes on a lot of things about the episode. Like he was saying, he wasn't picking Sheffield or he wasn't picking Great Barrington. He was picking of that night the experiences that you all experienced, and. Right. So he was saying not one was more than the other. And then I was getting that from, like I said, the responses I was getting after I put my 8-part series out. And it was overwhelming. I keep saying that word a lot, overwhelming. But, it was. I mean, and I was so honored to have Marcus Clark on because he was in Bahamas
Marcus was terrific.
Really. Oh yeah, he called me and says, I want to come on, but I'm in a process of film shoot right now. And as soon as I'm done, I'll contact you if that's okay. And I said, that's great, so I was honored, So he backed up almost everything, and he says he let you guys go, and he filmed I don't know how many hours of footage from each one of you, and he couldn't use it all,
No. No, and they just picked up bits and pieces, but it was well put together.
Actually, there was a craft they were assembling. It cost they had $300,000 into it. They were going to use. I think they were going to use that for the second episode. I'm not sure.
They were going to go back. See, here's the thing. It was known. It was known that the craft went from where I was 2 weeks prior to that. To where I was in the Berkshires. So I was up in the Adirondacks on Lake Champlain, and the UFO went to where I was and went over a family. And the next day they were interviewed by the Plattsburgh Air Force Base, which at that time was Project Blue Book. And I didn't know that till years later. I was doing an interview on Coast to Coast, and Tom Reed was on that one too, and I think it was someone that was in NASA. I'm not really sure who, and then the other person was a reporter or whatever. And I get a call, a text from this family who had the UFO over. I didn't know it up to this point, and she goes, "We need to talk." And I'm like, I'm in an interview. Typing back, "I'll call you as soon as I'm done on the interview." And she goes, "Please do." And she's back in Italy. So when she did, she told the story how they had it over them the same night.
Right. I mean,
That was going to be part. So they interviewed the one boy, well, you know, Bill Clark. They interviewed Bill, and he was going to be on Unsolved. So they were going to do. They were talking about. So they were going to do the second time that happened. They wanted to include Lake Champlain. Are they going to include Lake Champlain where I was? And they go, it's just too much. So they did what they did. And they did not do the second one. They had talked about it, but they didn't follow up on it, which is fine.
Right. But you know what? Because Unsolved Mysteries was off the air for quite a while, and it came back on Netflix. And I think that was a brilliant move from whoever's idea that was.
To do what? The UFO?
To continue Unsolved Mysteries and bring it on Netflix.
Well, it was really interesting because I was knowing a little stuff behind the scenes. And I had sent to the segment, you know, the segment producer, whatever, how the part of September 1st was recorded by the Plattsburgh Air Force Base. So I said, but I also saw it on, you know, some Google search for Westfield, which is not far from here in Massachusetts. And so they wrote to him and just to try to get them the interview, and it went up the chain of command and it came back down from the top. It said hot. In other words, don't touch it.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing we know, the Air Force knew, the government knew that the Unsolved was going to come out with a top UFO story. And they knew where it was coming from and what it was about. So they knew the facts. And about a week before Unsolved aired, the UFO story, they came out with theirs. And I always felt that that was just to soften the blow a little bit.
Yeah, probably. I'm going to take a short break here, and we'll come back and talk about your book and your movie and everything else.
Okay.
Ghost stories are always scarier when they're told by the very people who experienced them. Hi, I'm Becky.
And I'm Diana.
And we're the hosts of the Homespun Haints podcast.
We talk to people just like you who've come face to face with ghosts, demons, haints, and other strange paranormal phenomena. All of it makes for a chilling good time.
So grab yourself a sweet tea, turn off the lights, and listen to some eerie, true ghost stories on Homespun Haints. Wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not scared. Are you?
Okay, I'm back with Tom Warner. And now we're going to get into Beyond the Stars. You know, that was a fantastic book you wrote. And I am so honored that you put my foreword in there, that I said my two cents about you. And it was a good book. I read it from front to back. And I think I even read it twice. I thought it's a good book. What made you write the book? I mean, what was the inspiration?
Well, actually, I started writing the book before Unsolved.
Oh, really?
And what happened was I was talking to this one gal who, that was the family up on Lake Champlain. And I have to tell you that we hung out as kids and then teens, and we never talked about it. We would sit out looking up at the stars, looking for quote-unquote shooting stars, but we were all looking for UFOs, but none of us said it to each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so she was in Italy, and she had some health issues, and I insisted she get back to the States, and I made sure she got back to the United States. She was not in good health at that time. And then her health recovered, and I said to her, I'm writing all this stuff down. I want to write my story. And I just started my story, writing my book and everything. I was doing it really to just have that book up on the shelf for generations to come, for my family and whoever, you know. I was never intending anything more than that. And when she said to me, come on over next week and you can interview me, I said, well, that would be great. I'd love to. Because I wanted to put her in the story and how all this all came about and everything. And then I get a call, and then she had died. She had a brain aneurysm and died.
Oh,
and
that's too bad.
That's when I decided, no, I have to write this book, mm-hmm. you know. And I just started writing it, and the next thing I know, the Unsolved Mysteries called. And I remember my daughter said, Unsolved Mysteries called. And my daughter was a big Robert Stack fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I still didn't want to do it. I had done some other interviews, and I had done one, and it was for a senior thesis for somebody for it was a podcast that they did, and the thing disappeared off the internet, you know. But I watched it, and they were talking about people who were involved in the UFO phenomena that wanted to talk about it, and then some of them ended up dead. And I'm like, maybe I don't want to talk about this.
Right.
You know? Because I had been warned in my early 30s that from what I knew that I could be assassinated. And I'm like, I took that real serious, you know? So it took most of my life to come out and start talking about this stuff, you know?
Well, I know, excuse me for a second. I mean, I just know that from writing my book, you know, cause I'm going back to the same time you, about the same time period you were at, so 1967, you know, and it was like you don't talk about it,
stuff.
You know. I mean,
right?
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I just
so anyway. So I
can relate to that.
Yeah, you can. So they, I said I would do it if they would tell the truth about that night. I said at least give me. Just straighten out what happened that night, because it wasn't just about one person as somebody who was trying to make famous for, you know. And mm-hmm. I, if you do that, I'll do it. So the owner of Unsolved Mysteries flew out with her, you know, Terry flew out, Muir flew out with Bob Weiss, our executive producer, and they're in our library. And so Jane starts talking, what happened? And she goes to say how Tommy was running in a beam. He wasn't moving. All of a sudden, his hands jerked back, and he was gone. And Bob looks at Jane and says, what do you mean gone? He vanished in the beam. And Bob looks at Terry and says, we got a story here.
It was a good story. It really
they were,
was.
They were like, okay, so we're going to tell the what happened that night. And they did so much research, it wasn't funny. Now, here's one of the things that was on it that there's a little bit more to it. So the chief is on there, and he says, and he's looking at the paper from the police report, and he says, there's nothing on it. But he didn't flip the paper over. Now, how do I know that? Because I scanned it for Unsolved Mysteries. And on the other side, it was frantic notes with numbers on them. And one was about a mile from here. A little over a mile from here, a farmer. His number. Name and number.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't talk about it. Like, it's not like you don't write on the back of paper of a police report that's going in forever records. But there it is. So I have the copy of it, and Unsolved had it, but they didn't push that at all. You know, they just.
I love the cover of Beyond the Stars. I mean, you painted that. You painted that, right?
I did. I did it more for my own benefit to just remember that exact moment and my hands jerking back and everything. You know. So when after I did that, I said, "Yeah, I like that's good. That's a good book cover." So I was pleased how the book came out. I didn't tell everything in the book. This has been a process, Al, coming forward, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said it's still incomplete because I'm not telling the whole story yet.
Oh, would there be like a book two or?
We're doing a movie. A full feature movie.
And we're going to get into that movie, yes.
Right. Which has been this has all been a journey since this all happened. You know, I got to tell you, when Unsolved came out, I did so many interviews. I did interviews all over the world. And I even did an interview out of Kiev, Ukraine, that was being broadcast even back to Russia.
Oh, really?
And I was told that it was a pro-Russian group. And this this interview took place a year before Putin invaded, and I really said some things about Putin, you know, what I thought. And they turned around and they sent me an email back that they needed to do one more interview to clear up a few things and ask a few more questions if I didn't mind. And I wrote back, I said, I think I said everything I needed to say.
Right.
And what happened next is about 2 weeks later, I went to check my Gmail account, and every single email that they sent me and every email I sent to them vanished off my computer.
I can believe it. And, right. And I know how advanced the technology is now on getting inside your files and...
Right, I'm a country bumpkin. You know, what do you want?
Yeah, you know? And you got somebody from Russia coming into your
zip. It was just like a warning shot over the bow, you might say, mm-hmm. And it made me very, very aware at that point. You know, like
okay. Well, I don't blame you. You know, yeah, because you have to watch what you say. You know, because
well, the world knows where the hell I am. That's the
well, yeah.
I mean, we've been in the same house since 1835.
Yeah, and that was another question I was just going to ask you. You know, because we had talked before about your house. I think you said it was over 200 years old.
Yeah, well,
or close to it.
We've been 189 years.
Well,
or something
you're pretty yeah. close, you know. And I think you said back then it was haunted, or you had activity in there.
Well, yeah, but they're relatives, so who cares?
The old Warners, right?
You know, I mean, I don't say that in a very disrespectful way, great-great-grandma, if you're listening, you know. But, yeah, it's a little paranormal activity here and there, but, you know. compared to UFOs, it's like, what's left, you know?
Right, you know. So that painting you did for the cover of your book, I know before, and you might have to refresh my memory, but I think you were selling those as lithographs or something. You have an art page or something?
Right. I put some of that out there just in case anybody wanted it. But I just put the book out. You know, it was. I'll tell you this, Al. So I'll tell you a quick funny story. So I had to go to the registry. This the other day. Went to the registry. And I get up there. I'm thinking, oh, my God, look at the line. This is going to take me forever. And someone turned around and said, Tom Warner, I read your book. And the security guard's looking at me, and then someone else says, yeah, I saw you on TV. That was terrific program and everything. And a guy goes, oh, go right up there, he says. Now I'm like, okay. And then next thing I know, I was asked to go to the end of the counter. And I get up there, and the woman looks at me. She goes, she's looking at the paperwork. She's not looking up at me, right? And she goes, Tom Warner? She goes, my dad loves you. You know, he had seen things back in the 1969. He was up in Pittsfield and saw things. You know, she goes, oh. And then...
Well, I imagine that you will not show. I mean, there are going to be quite a few people that are going to recognize you, especially in the area you live in, you know.
Well, it doesn't matter. Wherever I go, people recognize me. It's kind of bizarre for a country boy to have this happen. But I really did it to help other people because... Through the years, you know, I've had at least 9 people that said they'd contemplated suicide until they heard me talk.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that quite a few times.
And that's means a lot to me.
Right. In some of the messages that I got, you know, I did my roundtable with other podcasters and everybody was involved in that, which I put a lot of work into that.
Right.
So I said, this one, I'm only going to do one. I picked you. So, maybe less work for me and let's just condense it to one. But the thing of it is, you know, I had a person contact me that said just what you just said, you know, she had a similar experience that you experienced, you know, being abducted. And it was the same night. And, so I don't know if she could have been on the same craft that you're on. I don't know.
You don't know. But because we did Unsolved Mysteries, so many people said what I was saying personally resonated with them. And if I can do that, that's great. And I'm hoping that the movie does the same.
Now let's get into the movie. What is this movie?
Without
saying too much and without getting yourself in trouble.
It's called Beyond the Stars, the Tom Warner story.
Okay, so, just like the book.
But
all right.
It's based on the book, except I'm spilling the beans. Everything.
Okay, so that answers my question about book two. All right.
Yeah, so you know, the book told some I have to tell this one story. I don't know if it's in the book. I don't remember. We're meeting a so-called Men in Black. Did I have that in the book?
I think it was.
Right.
I think it was in the book. Yeah.
Right, towards the back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was so eye-opening, where this fella recognized me, and then I said he goes, and I read your book. And then he took me aside. He says, I want you to know, you were spot on everything that you wrote about. Everything. Do you understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I said, yes. I said, human aliens? Aliens? Humans who are humans but not from here? I said, and he goes, everything you said was spot on. And he said, then he asked me to take a selfie with him. And he goes, the guys in the office are never going to believe who I met today. I said, do the guys in the office know who I am? He looked at me real serious. He goes, Tommy, everyone knows who you are. And I'm like, oh. And then I just wanted to clarify one thing. That I love my country, the United States of America, and I love the Constitution of the United States of America. And he looked at me and goes, we know that. We already checked you out, kid.
So, like, is the movie like going to be, how's it going to be releases. Excuse me.
Well, we're looking to film next summer, so more details will come out by next summer.
So we're looking for a big release,
a full feature film.
Oh, okay.
Right. So we'll get into more of that as we go along. You know, we'll make more public announcements and stuff. So,
once that movie comes out, I'm going to have you back on. We'll promote that movie.
Al, you know, I would interview with you anytime, buddy. And you know, if you're ever out in the Berkshires.
I keep talking about we're going to do this year, but then since my book is finally coming out after 55 years, it'll be released October 1st. And I'm going to, I'm going to a Paracon in Virginia in October.
Good for you.
Our town here in Ohio, in Warren, has a ghost walk every year.
That's great.
Which draws in thousands and thousands of people. So I was offered a spot there to autograph and sell my book.
Right.
So I've got some busy stuff coming on. I had a little bit of setback with my wife, tearing her meniscus. I'm really looking at coming back coming to the Berkshires next year, you know.
Yeah, I just
Great Barrington.
I wanted to do the movie because I wanted to tell the complete story, everything, you know?
Uh-huh.
And after Unsolved aired, you know, I would say that the feedback was terrific. It really was. There was parts of it where, you know, some things that were being said by another particular, whatever.
Yeah.
And,
Well, you know, that's one thing I could not understand, you know, and it's just, and I'm not in the middle of it all, so I don't know.
Right.
But all I know is, and I've had this said to me before, some people who knew about some type of feud going on, and I didn't have a feud. I'm just saying, you know, my thinking was, wouldn't it benefit everybody if they came together and support each other?
That's exactly
what I've got from Unsolved Mysteries, and that's what they were pissed off about. So, without going into anything, I'm not going to do that.
This has calmed down since. I did it to help people.
And there's nothing wrong with doing the UFO shows. There's nothing wrong
with writing at all.
Right. No, there's nothing wrong with writing a book, which you did.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with Melanie wanting to step back away from this and taking a fresh air.
Everybody's an individual. They do what they want.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying it was a fantastic episode. I know it got a lot of heat from some people. But I think it was a fantastic episode. I think it went to
number one on Netflix within 4 hours of release.
Number one on Netflix. It stayed there for a long time.
Right.
And it's still talked about.
It's in 178 countries.
It's still talked about.
And, you know, I get people, like even in the States, someone said, oh, you're friends with Tom Warner. Oh, my God, he's a legend out here. Colorado. I'm a legend in Colorado. I didn't know that. I get people calling me from England, all over the world. All over the world. You know, it's like. You know, it's just my life changed completely after that, and I'm okay with it. But I had to do the movie because I had to tell the entire story to explain Beyond the Stars.
Yeah, I love that title. The picture. I wish you the best of luck on the movie. How's the book doing?
That book does all right. I get sales. I don't even pay attention to it. Honestly, I don't. You know, someone will come up, order a book, I have to say this, Al. It did work. It did turn out well. Here's what happened. So I did I was giving a lecture on my book, and a director producer came to hear me speak. And it ended up that particular director, I can't mention name yet, but he came to listen to me speak, and then he was blown away. And then we got together at the executive producer's house, and we sat down. I gave him my script, my movie script, and he got it on a Wednesday, and we had a meeting on Friday, and I agreed to have him direct the film at that point. So
you got
more details coming.
Okay, great. You know, and I can't wait to hear more about the details and closer when the movie starts to. I know it takes a while to get this stuff. I was in video production for years, so I know
it's painfully close. Oh, it's so much work.
I was a director. I was a producer. I was the editor. I was a sound guy. I was the casting guy. I mean, I went through. Talent agencies. I learned a lot about copyrights and registration and all that good and all that good stuff, and how you're sued from making one little mistake. You know, so I know there's a lot of work that goes into that. So I wish you the best of luck on the movie. And
yeah, I did that, and I was also interviewed for National Geographic, which will come out next year. It's a podcast. It's not a podcast. It's a TV show that's going to come out. Next year. They filmed in the spring. National Geographic did.
Yeah, well, you know, I appreciate you contacting me back and coming back on the show. And this is being heard right now on September 1st. So it is a 55th anniversary.
55 years.
55 years, man. Wow.
Well.
And you're still a young pup.
I'm still a young pup. Yeah, hey, by the way, I want to tell this, Al. Okay?
Yeah.
I run every day. I'm over at 940 days running straight.
Didn't you have like a little setback there when it was like snowing or something? You had like a blizzard or unheard of snowfall was in your area.
Oh, this I've run in blizzards, snow, rain, ice, thunder, you name it. 1,000 days. This goes back to when I interviewed in Kiev, and I thought of the Ukrainian people. I thought if they can get their butts out the door and defend themselves, I can go out and think of them and say a prayer and run. And so I thought the thing was going to be over in a year. Then it was 2 years. I said, okay, I'm going to do 1,000 days.
Days. Kudos to you too also because it's good for your health. And
It is. You know, and it's like I'm never going to do a streak like this again, Al. It's like insane. You know, I go up. I have times all of a sudden 9 o'clock at night. Oh my God, I forgot to run. Oh my God, I sneak out the door and run at night, you know? Thanks a lot for having me on. And Al, keep an eye on the sky, buddy. We'll be in touch.
And we'll be in touch and keep an update on the movie.
Okay. Thanks, Al. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Tom Warner. It's always great talking to you. And I can't wait to have you back on the show to talk about your movie, the updates. And thank you to everybody that made the Unsolved Mysteries, Berkshire's UFO, Tom Reed and Melanie and Marcus Clark, Justin, everybody had on the show, my roundtable, my 8 episode. Take a listen. It's in 2020. The Berkshire's UFO, there's an 8-part series. So I want to thank everybody that was involved. And you can check out my website, author, Al Cooley,
RockolaNightingale.com. All of my podcast episodes are on there. The link to my book to pre-order right now is on there. You can contact me on there. So AuthorAlCooley.com. And if you can, please leave a nice rating for me on Apple. I would really appreciate that. And I'll see you in 2 more weeks with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley podcast.